broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's podcast, radio show, Refresh Your Wealth. Excited to be here with you. This is Mark Kohler, and got to give Matt Sorensen a pass today. He's speaking at the RETA conference, Real Estate Investment Trust Association, some really cool technical conference on self-directing IRAs, and I think he's in Denver. He's just kind of the world traveler lately, and so proud of him. But if some of you are there at the RETA conference, you're missing out too. But if not, I'm going to be your sole host today, just like the good old days. And I for those that didn't know, you know, that may be new listeners, before Refresh Your Wealth, it was just me with the Mark Kohler Show for years. Yeah, I was pretty creative on that title, Mark Kohler Show. But anyway, now we're, of course, known as the Refresh Your Wealth Show, and I get Matt Sorensen by my side every week, but not this week. We'll just have to excuse it. But I'm really excited about the topic. This is going to be really informative for many of you that didn't realize the profits to be made with raw land. As I started to look into this, I've gotten more and more intrigued. And I don't know how the interview is going to play out. I didn't have a chance to kind of, you know, vet my guest as much as I'd wanted to. Mark Podolsky is a land investor extraordinaire around the country, and he's got his own podcast, and I've heard such great things that we finally grabbed him and got him on the show. So a little later here, we're going to have him come on the show and talk about how you can make passive income by buying raw land. I know that sounds crazy, but I've heard such amazing things about his system. So we're going to break it down, because we're all about building wealth, cash flow, living the dream. Real estate's a part of that, so we're just gonna run with it. So, kind of excited about that. Until then, we're gonna do our regular tax and legal tip. If you're a regular listener, you know what that's all about. Hopefully, it's a tip that's gonna help you in your individual life. Sometimes it's not. You know, it's that we try to throw out a variety of topics each week. And for those that are new, please remember you can get to refreshyourwealth.com and sign up for our weekly free newsletter, get regular updates, and you'll find that information extremely helpful. Now, for our legal tip today, I was able to wrangle Jaron Bergeson, who's been on our show as a regular in the past. He is the director of our law firm in Southern Utah. He's a lawyer licensed in at least two or three states. And back in the day, he was a budding ESPN broadcaster. At least that's what he went to school for. And his only claim to fame now is he's a regular contributor on the Refresh Your Wealth Show. Is that okay? If you felt like your life's a failure, or is this like just what you were hoping for?
Well, a little bit. You make me put on my radio voice every time you bring that up. So I have to make sure I sound as professional as possible. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you being here. Calling in on Skype. And so we hope the quality for our listeners is there. So Jaron graciously offered to share a legal tip. He also has an excellent article that went out in our newsletter this week that I think affects so many business owners. And rather than steal his thunder, I'll let Jaron talk about this article and what you discovered and decided to write about.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Yeah, I mean, a huge deal for business owners is bringing on workers, people that are going to work for you. And are those people going to be classified as independent contractors, or are they going to be employees? There are lots of reasons people want to classify their workers as independent contractors. You don't have to do withholdings. You don't have to get unemployment insurance, workers' comp. There's all kinds of reasons why it's more beneficial for an employer, a company, to have their workers be independent contractors. It seems like, you know, I've been practicing kind of in this area for about 6 or 7 years, and it seems like every year it gets harder and harder for people to make that classification. The laws change to benefit these workers. Judges come out with different opinions, and a big one came out in California last week.
Well, and I think before we get to this huge court case in California and the tips you're going to share, let's build the case a little bit more for the current situation. We've got this gig economy. A lot of people have this side hustle, the side gig, trying to make some extra money. And business owners like that too, but maybe from your perspective, what kind of problems does that occur? I mean, it's almost like tempting for a business owner to fall into some traps. Maybe explain the current atmosphere.
Right. There's, you know, I think it's 55 million people roughly are in the gig economy, where they have this kind of side job, or maybe it's their only job and they've got two or three of them, or maybe it's one that they do on what to them is a full-time basis. You know, it's one third of the workers in America. And for employers, like I was talking about, It is tempting. Even though somebody, you control what they do, you tell them when to show up, you give them the equipment to do what they're going to do. It's tempting to, they're really employees, but it's tempting to call them independent contractors. I had somebody this week who is doing a new business. I'm not going to say what kind of business it is, but we were talking about this. What's the difference between an independent contractor and an employee? I'm going to have these people do this stuff. Are they independent contractors or are they employees? And he told me what they were going to be doing. And I said, that sounds like an employee to me in a lot of ways. You're going to have a hard time making the argument that they're independent contractors. And he said, well, everybody that does this in my industry does it the same way. And they say that these people are independent contractors.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a crappy argument in court, is that everybody else did it this way. That's not one of the factors courts are looking at. They don't care how everybody else did it. And if you tell them how everybody else did it, maybe those people are going to get prosecuted too, or not prosecuted, but they'll have to deal with the same issues you're dealing with. But it's not an argument that, well, I did what everybody else does. The law doesn't care.
Yeah, I used to use that argument on my parents as a kid all the time. Well, my brother, he was out there throwing rocks, you know, and why can't I? Well, you're the one that got caught. And that...
Right.
My argument, it always seemed to fail, and I didn't know why. But now I know, thanks to Jaron Bergeson and his tip today, I now know that tip, that why my parents would, you know, be so arbitrary. But, okay, so we've got business owners that want to save a buck, and they don't want to bring on an employee for months or weeks or years on a long time. They want to get his job done and push this person out the door. And it sounds easy because everybody else is doing it. But there was a case. So tell us about this case in California.
So the case in California, and it only applies to California right now, and it only for sure applies to wage claims, not to other portions of this part of the law in independent contractor issues with workers' comp and so forth. But it says, in the past, kind of the test has been, how much do you control what these people do? Do you tell them when to be there? Do you tell them where they have to work? Do you provide the equipment that they work on? The more control you have, the more likely it is that somebody's going to be an independent contractor. That was kind of the test. And there's
no. The more control you had, the more likely they were an employee.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I misspoke. To be an employee, the more control, more likely it is they're an employee. And there are different flavors of that across all 50 states, but that was the main issue. The California case says that's the first part of the test. Okay, do you control these people? Do you control all those aspects of their work? If the answer to that is no, then there are two other parts of the test.
Why don't they just leave it up test one? Why do they have to have two more tests?
And you've got to fit all three, because it's California, you know that. They this kind of stuff. The next part of the test in California is, does this worker perform work that's outside the usual course of the hiring company's business? That's trouble for Uber and Lyft. They hire, what's their course, normal course of business? What do? They provide rides to people. What do their drivers do? They provide rides to people. So this is not outside the course of the normal business that Lyft and Uber do. Those people are going to be considered independent contractors for wages for sure in California. So even if you meet that, now the third part of the test is the worker is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, or business of the same nature as the work that they're providing for the hiring entity. So do they do this for other people? Are they a plumber and they came and did work at your house and you hired them? And then they go out and do plumbing work for other people. If so, they're an independent contractor. They're not your employee. But again, Lyft and Uber, if they don't do that for anybody else, they don't drive for anybody else, that's going to be a problem.
Wow. Well, now I do want to provide the distinction that you did say there that's important. For you folks in the other 49 states that do not belong to the Socialist Republic of California, your tests are going to be a lot softer, easier. Even the IRS has an easier test.
Right.
In Jerem's article this week, if you haven't already signed up for our newsletter, please do. The blog is on our website, kkoslawyers.com. But the newsletter has multiple articles and videos and tax tips that go with it. It's all free. But in Jerem's article, he highlights the California three-part test. And then there's also links to other articles, a couple of my articles, that highlight the more, I guess, subjective or easier tests that you might apply in your own state across the country. So as a business owner, I think this is so important to recognize that I'm just going to say, it's not the end of the world if you have to make someone an employee either. As long as you have one employee and you're doing the payroll process, adding another employee to that mix is not that difficult. It's always the biggest hurdle when it's your first employee, because you got to get all that crap in order and the systems and the procedures. But I would encourage many of you, if you already have employees and you're doing the payroll procedure every 2 weeks, and you're on the bubble with someone that's acting like a contractor / employee and you can't tell the difference, go with the safe harbor. Just make them an employee and not stress about it. That's my take. Jerem, what would you recommend people do, not just in California, but nationwide, to maybe stay out of harm's way? Is there any kind of takeaways as well?
Yeah, I mean, you need to look into what the law is in your state. Talk to an attorney, an employment law attorney that can help you. They're not going to be able to give you bright lines in many states. It's not a slam dunk in a lot of cases either way or one way or another. And if you're close, yeah, maybe it's because we're attorneys and we see the bad side of this that we say, hey, take the safe route. But when this comes into play, you get an employee who leaves. They're mad. They start making claims. They're looking to make your life difficult. You may be fine until you get into that situation, and then they go and make claims with the state. They go and make claims with the IRS that make your life really difficult. You want to, if you've made them an employee, then you're going to have much less hassle with that person when they leave.
Yeah, no, I love it. I want to give two quick examples here, and then maybe if you have one last pointer, Jerem, but. What two examples? I have a client here in Idaho. They've been a client for years. Whether or not I'm in Idaho is irrelevant. They're here and they run a trucking company, and their drivers. A lot of trucking companies can call their drivers subcontractors. Some trucking companies can't. It depends on, again, the control over the routes and who owns the truck and how they're compensated. There's a lot of variables. Well, of course, they got sucked into a wage claim audit. My amazing assistant, Nancy Ricks, who some of you have already talked to or work with, if you call her office, you'll talk to Nancy. She used to be a state auditor for wage claims. And so she jumped on the case and went to the advocacy of our client and has really helped him out of a hard spot, because if you were on the inside before, you kind of know what they look for. But that's a really common situation. The other quick example I wanted to give is I had a client that you may say, well, they're never going to catch me. How does this happen? And so another example is I had a client that had a subcontractor, and I think they had him doing some cleaning in the office, but they didn't clean for anyone else. And it was pretty regular cleaning schedule. I mean, they really did kind of look and act like an employee. They used the company's supplies when they came, all that sort of thing. Well, they terminated this woman's services, and she went and made a unemployment claim. And they're like, well, you were never an employee. Well, she's like, well, I thought I was. She didn't even understand what the 1099 was all about. And yeah. she wasn't trying to get back at him, but she made an unemployment claim. And all of a sudden, the unemployment office is, what the heck is going on over there at your office? And so they created this huge audit, and all these payments to other people got sucked into it. And it wasn't a vindictive scenario, but it was just someone that, heaven forbid, she would have got hurt on the job, which is another.
Right.
Oh, so.
Right.
Anyway, a couple examples.
Yeah, the last thing I would say, and this is in my article too, is take a look at your business model. If you don't feel like your business model can survive somebody being your workers being classified as employees instead of independent contractors, there may be a problem with your business model.
Mm, great point.
You need to, if you're not making enough money to make this work, if with that somewhat small difference, that's a problem. So think about that.
Yeah. And I'll say this, the average cost of an employee is about 10 to 12%. So if you're paying someone $10 an hour, if you make an employee, it's going to cost you $11.50. And so if the world's going to crash on you, if you can't pay him a sub is 10 and paying them is $11.50 and cost is going to drive you out of business, maybe you're in the wrong business or have the wrong model. If your margins are that tight. So great tip, Jerem. Well, thanks for being with us, man. I love it.
Jerem. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
You bet. Jerem Bergeson, folks. And if you need to get a hold of Jerem, you can get a hold of him at JAROM@KKOSLawyers.com. Of course, the law firm link is on the RefreshYourWealth.com website. Get to the law firm and ask for Jerem. It's not Jerome. It's not Jerm. It is Jerem. And he's a stud. So reach out to him. Thanks, Jerem.
Thank you.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, the tip I want to bring up today is a unique one, and it may, some of you seem not as applicable to utilize, but it may be as applicable to avoid. See, sometimes tax tips from all sorts of yahoos or, I don't know, well-intended folks around the country share tax tips that sound really cool, and then you get into the mix of them and they're much more of a pain. They're not as profitable or workable as you thought, and you waste a lot of time and energy going down that rabbit hole. Sometimes they work out great. So that's the tip I want to share today, and it's two words: cost segregation. I know some of you are like, what the crap is Mark talking about? Okay, here's what cost segregation is about. For you real estate investors out there, sorry, I know some of you do not invest in real estate, so this might just be, an interesting factoid. But if I go out there and buy a commercial building, maybe it's just a little dentist office. I buy this cute little building and I, fix it up a little, put in some new carpet, paint it, and I find a dentist that wants to come in and maybe remodel it a little bit and rent from me. So I got this dentist little commercial building. Now, it doesn't have to be huge. And I put it on my books and I start collecting rent from this dentist. And I go to depreciate. Well, a commercial building is depreciated over 39 years. So you don't get to write off the cost of the building in one fell swoop. You got to spread it out over 39 years. And I don't even get to write off the land. I can only write off the building. That's what's called depreciation. Now, it may appreciate in value, but the write-off procedure is called depreciation. Well, 39 years is kind of a long time, freak, So that carpet's not going to last 39 years, maybe the ceiling fan or even the landscaping and some sprinkler systems or whatever. That's a long time. Well, I should be allowed to write off those pieces of assets attached to the building, included in the building. I should be able to write those off in a more advantageous manner, a faster way. So some of that carpet might be able to be written off in 3 or 5 years, or some of the equipment or supplies attached to the building. So that, my friends, is what's called cost segregation. You have a specialist come in and they segregate the property into all of its pieces and parts. And then you can write off some of it faster than others. Well, this can really ramp up your write-offs. And here's the core question. Would you rather have a write-off now, or would you rather spread it out over time? Well, I'd always like to have a write-off now, because then I get the value of those tax dollars to use in my business or in my life rather than spread it out over time. If the IRS is going to give me some money, give it to me now. I'll use it rather than spread it out. Well, that's the concept of cost segregation. You segregate the property, you take advantage of write-offs faster than you otherwise would have, and that gives you more money to run your business rather than giving the IRS almost an interest-free loan. They owe you money if you just check a box a certain way. So why not take it? If you let them give you that money over time, you're giving them a loan. So we always want to get our money back from the IRS as fast as possible. So all of you are like, well, Mark, I own real estate. Sign me up. Can I use it on residential property? Yes. Duplexes? Yes. Fourplexes? Sure. Commercial buildings? Obviously. Well, man, maybe even a storage unit facility, a mobile home park? Sure. If we can divide up the assets, we can split it up and depreciate it faster. Now, all of you may think, well, Mark, oh my gosh, everybody should do this. That's a freaking awesome idea. Well, now the rabbit hole. Sometimes those write-offs you're not able to take because you don't qualify as a real estate professional. You have more passive losses than you need. So why go after a write-off if you really can't use it or need it? And then also the cost of the cost segregation. There's a price tag for it. You can't do it yourself. Your accountant can't do it. Your lawyer can't do it. Your banker can't do it. Your insurance agent can't do it. You have to hire an engineer or a cost segregation specialist or a company to go in and do the test. Now, I've seen companies come through my office over the last 20 years that will do a residential property for $400 or $500. I've seen some that charge as high as $1,500. Well, when you're looking at how much is this write-off going to really help me and the cost of the segregation and this whole time-consuming process, is it really worth it? So that, my friends, is why I say be careful. Don't think the cost segregation is the next best thing to slice bread. Let's be patient. Let's run the numbers generally. Talk to your accountant and go, if I were to do this, would it save me taxes and about how much? And even if you ballpark it, even just come up with some sort of idea as to how much it might save you, that could be the defining factor as to whether or not you chase this rabbit down the hole. So be cautious, be careful. It's called cost segregation. Pretty cool strategy. Some of you hearing it now, I just saved you thousands. Some of you hearing it now are going to go, think twice, and I may have just saved you countless hours chasing this, you know, strategy. So bottom line, all of you are more the well-wise and all of you are wiser, hopefully, and more informed to hear about this and hopefully use this strategy called cost segregation or to avoid it. So good luck and hang in there. Now, I think we're going to be heading to our special guest now.
Buckle up. It's time to refresh you listeners. Mark and Matt have hand-selected professionals from around the world. From successful businesses, personal stories, or hard-hitting tips and tricks, please welcome today's Refresh Your Wealth guest.
Well, now it's my pleasure to introduce our special guest today. Excited to have Mark Podesky with us. I may have butchered that, Mark. Did I hit it? Podesky.
Podolsky. You know, you were so close, Mark. It's Podolsky. Yeah, this is why I branded myself the Land Geek, because no one can pronounce my last name.
That's right. I should have said, we've got the special guest, the Land Geek, on. So thanks, Mark, for your patience. Well, for those that already know Mark, he has his own podcast, The Best Passive Income Model and the Art of Passive Income. But he is widely considered the country's most trusted and foremost authority on buying and selling raw and developed land. And I've got some cold, hard, you know, questions for him today about raw land investment. Excited about this. Mark knows our podcast, too. We've connected, and he knows that many of you, our listeners, are investors. And whether it's income property, raw land, commercial, residential, and then just good old business owners. So we're excited to get Mark's take on all this. But a little bit more. I want to say he's been investing in raw land since 2001. That's a while. 5,000 unique transactions. He's got a great rating and customer satisfaction rating on different all sorts of levels. And he's one of the top rated podcasts in the investing category. I like some of his books, and it is a training system. And I will probably talk about this more because I want to make sure that people, if you like what Mark said, you can get to it. But he's got the Land Geek Passive Income System. No No More R's, How to Create a Passive Income in Real Estate Without Renters, Renovations, or Rodents. Well, I definitely don't want rodents. I might be able to live with renters and renovations. But and Mark, I also understand you hail from Scottsdale, Arizona, the land of old men and young women. But you're a pretty young-looking guy. I mean, how do you survive out there? You're like a fish out of water down in Scottsdale.
No, I mean, Mark, you know, I'm married. I got three kids. I just, it's furtive glances. It's furtive glances. That's all it is. It's like looking at the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will tell you that, you know, I'm, you know, 46, and it's a great place to live. It really is.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I've seen so many grandfathers out there with their granddaughters holding hands. It's adorable.
And, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well,
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
It's not my thing, but it's a thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Well, Mark, thanks for being with us. And as you know, I've already mentioned here on the show, but if you didn't know, I am flying solo, Matt Sorensen, speaking at the RITA conference today, a national conference for self-directed IRA custodians and trust companies. So we're going to give Matt a pass. But so it's my honor to have this time with you. And I know that you're all about takeaways and making sure we add value to our listeners. You do the same thing with your podcast. So I'm just going to ask a hard-hitting question right from the start. Why in the heck would I buy raw land versus an income-producing property? Why do I want to take – is that a – isn't it sounds more risky to me. Am I crazy?
You know what? I'm glad that you say that. So this is what makes my niche so lucrative, is that your conventional wisdom, right, looks at, I understand a house. Everyone needs a place to live, right? Or an apartment or a commercial building. These are physical objects that we can all see and wrap our heads around.
Okay. You got me
so far. And
they
cash flow beautifully.
Yeah.
You're going to go on HGTV and the DIY network, and you're going to see all these different professional real estate investors doing what they do. And it's phenomenal. And it's phenomenal. So all the conventional wisdom says this is the way to go. So what happens when somebody goes the other way? Nobody goes that way.
Yeah.
So it's been a wonderful playground. There are billions of acres of raw land available in this country. And there is a lust for land in this country. So essentially what we do is we take the housing model and we turn it on its head. So can I walk you through it?
Yeah, I was just thinking of the Oklahoma land grab. Are we going to get in wagons and just shoot a gun and just go for it? I mean, man, you made it sound like we're back in the 1850s here. This is exciting. I'm ready to go. I'm saddled up. All right. Okay.
All right. So, Mark, you're in Idaho, correct?
I am. See, there you go. Me saying saddled up is, you know, a fairly common term around here. So, no, I'm just
there.
Okay.
You go.
All right. All right. Okay.
All right. So you live in Idaho, and let's assume that you owe $200 in back taxes on a 10-acre parcel in Texas, okay, right? So I contact the county in Texas, maybe the treasurer or the assessor, and I get the public information of all the people that owe back taxes,
okay,
on vacant land. And oh my gosh, there's Mark J. Kohler. He owes $200 in back taxes, and he lives in Idaho.
Yeah.
You're advertising two things to me. Number one, you have no emotional attachment to that raw land. Yeah. It's in Texas. You live in Idaho. Yeah. And number two, you're distressed in some way, right? Because even though it's only $200, we don't pay for things that we don't value. Yeah. And you've been getting notices from the treasurer that if you don't pay your back taxes, that eventually you're either going to lose that property to a tax deed investor or a tax lien investor. So what I'll do is I'll look at the comparable sales for the last 12 to 18 months on that 10-acre parcel in Texas.
Okay.
And I'll take the lowest comps, and all I'm going to do is divide by four. And that's going to get me what Warren Buffett would call a 300% margin of safety. And then I'm going to send you an actual offer on that property, right? So I'm not going to be like the housing people saying, I'm interested in buying your land. And they're like, well, I'm interested in selling my land. I'm going to send you an actual offer because I can always make more money. I can't get more time. So I don't want to be in the appraisal business.
Yeah, and you don't want to ho-hum around and start talking about my kids and fishing. You want to just send me the freaking offer. Just go straight for the jugular. All right.
Okay. Straight to the jugular. Now, in reality, 3 to 5% of people accept our quote-unquote top dollar offer. So in our illustration here, you get my offer of $2,500. The comps are $10,000. And you say, well, $2,500 is better than nothing, right?
Plus, I got to pay my taxes.
you got to pay my taxes. I'm never going to go see that land anyways. I live in Idaho. Yeah. So you accept it. Then I go through my due diligence. I'm going to make sure you actually own the property. I'm going to make sure that the back taxes are only $200. I'm going to make sure there's no liens or encumbrances, no breaks in the title chain. I'm going to go through this whole property checklist. And then I'm going to buy that property from you for $2,500. And I'm going to sell that property in 30 days or less. And I'm going to make about 1,000% return on my investment. And I'm going to make that thing cash flow. And this is where the magic happens. Guess who's going to buy that property? I've got a built-in best buyer. Do you know who it is?
No, I'm dying to hear.
It's the neighbors. The neighbors. So I sent out neighbor letters saying, look, before I go to the open market, here is your opportunity. Expand your holdings. Protect your privacy. Protect your views.
And there could be
oftentimes,
yeah, there could be oil under this land. I mean, this could be.
But they already own the property there. They already like it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So now they have fear. That fear gets hit in their heart. Now, if they pass for whatever reason, we're going to go to our buyers list. If our buyers list passes, we're going to go to a little website that you've probably never heard of called Craigslist. It's the 10th most trafficked website in the U.S. Okay. And we're going to Facebook buy sell groups. And the way I'm going to sell it is I'm going to make it irresistible. So I'm going to ask for a $2,500 down payment, and I'm going to owner finance a car payment, let's say $449 a month at 9% interest for the next 8 years. And so I've got a one-time sale. I've got recurring passive income of $449 a month. I don't deal with any renters, rehabs, renovations, or rodents.
Well,
and because I'm not dealing with a tenant, you'll love this, Mark. I'm exempt from Dodd-Frank, RESPA, and the SAFE Act.
Oh, my gosh. Now, you could have rodents on that land. Come on. I mean...
But rodents that aren't going to cost me anything to fix.
That's part you could go shoot them for fun.
I could go shoot them. Yeah. I actually had somebody call me. He bought a 40-acre flower still in Nevada. He asked me one question. He's like, can I go out there and shoot? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay. And he put his down payment down. And that was it.
I love it. No. Wow. I have to say that not only is that an incredible example of money making, but I'm very impressed how easily you described it and summarized that. You should get your own podcast show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea.
Note to self. I want a piece of that. Okay. But many of you listening to this don't know that I'm watching Mark on his walking treadmill as he throws this down. I mean, he's got his stand-up desk, his treadmill, his headset. Dude, you're like just a machine.
Well, thank you. I will humbly accept the compliment. I appreciate it. And, you know, speaking of machines, I will say that the best part of this business, and this is where the geeky part of it comes in, it's 90% automated with software. So I spend working in Frontier Properties, my investing company, 2 hours a week in the business. It's all automated. It's the best time ever to be in business. It's incredible.
Well, okay. Now let's get back to this. I know I joke around too much, and many of our listeners love this banter, Mark. So don't think I'm wasting time here. This is good. Wow, what a great summary. Now, so a couple of questions I have. Obviously, you've got a system that you'll. This is not an infomercial. Our listeners know that. So you'll at least share your contact info. But is it hard to find these lists of people that are back on taxes?
So let's go find the properties, right? So we're going to go to a website called NACO.org.
Can you spell that? And that's MACO or NACO?
Yeah, National County of Organizations.
Okay.
So all the 3,007 U.S. counties, all the contact information for planning and zoning, the assessor, the treasurer, the recorder, all live in this one website called N as in Nancy, A is an Apple, C is in Charlie, O is an Oscar.org. So you can email to get that information directly from the county. Now, once you get that information, you're going to have to scrub that list and get into a CSV file or an Excel file. We're going to manipulate it because we want to get rid of commercial property, industrial property, houses. And we can sort by VL, vacant land, right?
Okay.
Well, whatever that use code is in that county to just get to our vacant land. We're going to do one more batch because when we are pricing our offers, I'm not going to send the person that has 1 acre the same offer as a person that has 10 acres because the person that has 10 acres is going to get that offer and they're going to send me back glitter in the mail. So we have to then batch by acreage and price it correctly. And that's also going to assist us in due diligence as well.
Okay.
And oftentimes an easy kind of quick and dirty way to do that is by APN number or assessor's parcel number.
Gosh, now I work with so many real estate investors, and I've been in the industry as the tax and legal guy for 20 years. And I've seen this model, but again, I love the way that you've broken this down. Can I ask why are you sharing this with people? I mean, why don't you just sit back and make money every day and say, I'm not going to tell anyone. This is a best kept secret.
You sound like my wife. But she asked me the same question. So we did the math. And the way the math works is there are billions of acres of property. There's no hedge funds. There's no private equity groups. There's no big money in this niche.
Ooh,
so when we do the math, you, me, a million other people in this niche, we're all going to run out of money before we run out of deal flow. And since I've been teaching, my investing company has only gone up. My clients, their investing companies have only gone up. So there's enough for everybody. Now, I will tell you that when the time comes, and it hasn't happened yet, and a seller calls me or emails me and says, hey, Mark, I got your offer, and I got three others just like it, and yours is the lowest, that's when we know, okay, it's time to stop teaching. But at this point in time, I really don't see that happening, and it hasn't happened. And the reality is that, again, you know, someone might listen to this. This is not sexy, right? I mean, no. You're not going to see me on HGTV in front of my computer.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm watching you on this treadmill, and I might, you know, argue with you there. You're looking pretty good. So
no, I mean, thank you.
Okay,
it's not a sexy niche. Like, okay, let's say we go to a REIA meeting, Real Estate Investor Association meeting, right? There's 100 people in that meeting. 99 of them are going to be landlords, house flippers, or wholesalers.
Yeah.
You and I, Mark, are the only land guys. Massive market, no one doing it.
Yeah. No, I'm a white unicorn. Is there anything other than a white unicorn? What do you call it? Whatever in the room too is a guy that enjoys taxes. Okay, now let me ask a few more pointed questions. Are you willing to share what states you like? What's criteria do you like to go?
So Mark, let's face it. Okay, nobody's going to wake up today and think to themselves, "Boy, I'd really like to own some raw land in Iowa." Unless you live in Iowa, right? So we want to focus on the fastest growing states, and we want to focus on the sunshine states that have an abundance of inexpensive raw land. So those states for me are going to be Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada. I love California. And then we're going to go a little bit in the Northwest. We're going to go to Oregon. We're going to go to Washington. And then we're going to go to Florida. So we're literally ignoring huge swaths of the United States. And the reason being is it's not like we can't do deals there. It's just that we want to have the biggest buyer population as possible.
Okay. Now, when you're out buying these properties, do you worry about the bubble? Do you worry about the next market crash per se? Or are you?
I don't. I mean, I use a program. I don't know if you know Mike Michalowicz, his profit first sort of accounting system. Mm-hmm. So essentially what we do is we are, you know, using sort of the fiscal discipline with in the back of our minds, knowing that, you know, at any point in time we could have a recession and we want to save a percentage of cash to, you know, even out that bump and then, you know, be able to buy. So like, you know, when I was doing this in 2008, 2009, 2010, I could buy all day long.
Yeah.
And I did, but it was way tougher to sell. And as the market recovered, it was still really easy to buy, and it was easier to sell. Now it flies off the shelf, but it's getting a little tougher to buy because the prices are rising. People are not as distressed. And so we like equilibrium. We're kind of going to, we can kind of see now that it's sort of tipping over into a seller's market. And that's when we know, okay, let's prepare. Yeah. And, you know, have some fiscal discipline.
So, and I guess for those that may have not seen the back end, let me give my take on this. And then you tell me if I'm wrong. In some ways, you don't care if there's a market. This is what I kind of expected you to say. But if you say, well, there's a market adjustment, I don't care because I'm never paying more market value to buy these properties. I'm doing a 25% purchase to fair market value because you said you divide it by four and there's your offer.
Right.
So even if our market adjusted and there's a 50% drop in the value of real estate, you're still buying below market value at that point. And
no, absolutely. I mean, I had a buddy, we were kind of commiserating, and he's like, you know, at the top of the market in 2008, he was at $250,000 a month in passive income. And then, you know, he lost 50% of that note portfolio because people stopped paying.
Right.
And he went down to $125,000 a month. And like, I'm playing like the smallest violin ever for him. Yeah. So, but then because we do land contracts, there's no cost of foreclosure.
Right.
So he still owns the underlying asset and was able to get a new buyer, a new down payment, and then he's back up to like $350 a month.
Yeah. I was just going to say, in the second aspect of this is, in some ways, you're praying for people to default. Let me start with someone fresh. I'll get a new down payment and reset.
That's why we don't do credit checks. We use a software program called GeekPay.io that actually automates the collecting of the money from the borrower via ACH. And if the ACH fails, it'll hit the credit card as a backup on file. So we've lowered our default from about 8% to 4% just with software. And it automates the notifications, and it literally has eliminated two big pain points for me with managing notes, which was, hey, Mark, what's my current balance? Right. Now they can log in and see it. And hey, Mark, how do I make a prepayment this month? Totally. It does all the math for the amortization. And then if they are in default, it notifies them and there's nothing else to do. Oh. It just resell that property and the software just says resell and we go.
Mark, this is amazing. I love this. I am so pleasantly surprised. My team said, you've got to interview Mark and talk about what you're doing. And we know who you are. And I just didn't make this a priority. And I'm just going to say it publicly. I am so grateful you're on the show. This is so fast. Okay, I got to get to it. How do people get your system? Because I'm going to buy it for my college kids. I'm going to say, stay in college and do this on the weekends. But where do they go?
It really is a good side hustle. I've got some kids who are actually in college right now. They're going to make over $200,000 this year just on one deal in New Mexico. These kids are 19 and 20. It's crazy. So it really is a nice side hustle. And you can do this a couple hours a week and really move the needle in your life. Get up to about 10, 15,000 a month in passive, you know, working a couple hours a day and doing it. So I would say the best place to go is thelandgeek.com. And you can download for free our passive income blueprint. You can get the ebook, How to Avoid the Three Fatal Land Buying Mistakes. You can also download for free the first chapter of my latest book that's getting launched in 2 weeks.
Oh,
Dirt Rich.
Well, no, what?
One ambitiously lazy geek created passive income in real estate without renters, renovations, and rehabs.
Man, well, my marketing director, she didn't even tell me about your new book in 2 weeks. I just had the old one here. This is awesome. I didn't even know about it. Okay, yeah, start over again.
So you can do that. So
Dirt Rich. Amazon in 2 weeks, right?
Amazon in 2 weeks. Okay. And then I would say we'll deliver each week to your email inbox the Art of Passive Income podcast. We have other podcasts as well that you can unlock, you can listen to, and it's all free. And by that time, you should really have a good sense if this is something that resonates with you or not. And I'll tell you what, Mark, if your listeners email support@thelandgeek.com and they put in the subject line Mark or Mark K or Mark Kohler or Mark J. Kohler. Okay. Doesn't matter.
There you go, baby. Right.
We're going to send them for free our $97 passive income launch kit course for free.
Wow. I didn't even know you were going to do that either. I sound like such an infomercial guy. Can you throw in some knives? But
and there's also going to be knives and a blender.
Dude, you're good.
Just pay $39.99 in shipping and handling. we can break that up into two payments.
Okay, I love your style. All right, this is fun. Okay, so email support@thelandgeek. That's thelandgeek.com. And in the subject line, put Mark Kohler, whatever. And you'll send them off this $97 value to get started. Again, I'm full honesty here and disclosure to our listeners. I did not know you were going to do that either. And this is phenomenal. I really appreciate that. This is.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, honestly, my whole goal on coming on was to make Matt regret not being
here.
Yes,
he is. He's
because I wasn't going to do any of this. But then when Matt's not here, I'm just like, you know what? That's it.
Yeah, that's right. I got to do more interviews without Matt. See, you know, the love I get from our guests.
But only, you know, for people that are, you know, because it can't be Mark and Matt. It has to be Mark to get it.
All right.
So if they mention Matt, they're not going to get it.
Yeah, nothing. You're going to owe $97. We'll hit your card. Now, let me ask this. Okay. So what are the risks? I mean, so it's you make it sound like, you know, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's all, you know.
Right. I mean, due diligence. If you, okay, the number one.
Give us a nightmare story. Give us a nightmare story, too, if you don't mind.
Okay, so a nightmare story. Unfortunately, the problem with nightmare stories is that when you're buying an asset 25 cents on the dollar, right, there's someone on the other end of it. So I don't have any nightmare stories, unfortunately. There should be nightmare stories, but in this niche, there's a pig for every barn. But I would say that the biggest risks are if you buy a property, it's an HOA. Right, or a PO, or a property owners association, you don't know it. There's some kind of code, like you got to mow the lawn. If you don't do your due diligence correctly, you don't know what you're buying, or you're buying and there's tons of back taxes on it, or there's liens or encumbrances, those types of things, you could lose money. Now, I've been doing this full time since 2001. I've done over 200 land deals. It's embarrassing to say, and this really sounds bad, so I shouldn't say it, but I've never lost money on a deal. Now, I'll give you an example. I bought 40 acres in New Mexico. This is when I first started. Didn't really know what I was doing. And I bought 40 acres on the side of a mountain. 25 of them were inaccessible. So, and I paid $2,500.
You're a smart guy. Yeah, you're thinking. Yeah, outside, yeah. You're out of box thinker. Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll put this up on eBay. And I'll put it at a dollar, no reserve auction. And if I get my money out, I'll be happy. The first day it was bid up to $2,500. By the 10th day, it was at $32,500. And I'm freaking out and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this guy's going to sue me or whatever it's going to be. And so I call him up. I'm like, you know, you realize like the maps, you saw the maps, like it's on the side of a mountain. He's like, it's perfect. He was a director in LA and he wanted to go out there and film and he didn't want to deal with permits.
Oh my gosh. And 32 grand was like a rent fee for him.
It was like nothing for him. So, you know, it's a very odd niche. Getting back to your first question, who's buying this stuff? I call it like man jewelry. Like a lot of men like to buy this. They like the way it feels to just have this, you know, deed in their hand that they own this piece of land they can go out to, they can bug out to, show their banker, it increases their net worth. Yeah. I mean, I got a guy who pays $5,000 a month in notes every month for years and years, just CEO. And I'm like, Don, what are you doing with all this land? He's like, I just think it's cool. I'm like, have you gone out and seen it? He's like, no, just, you know.
This is, you know, your target is Tom Cruise in Far and Away. You just wanted land.
Just wanted land. So, I mean, you know, nothing to maintain, nothing to protect. It's, it lasts forever. It's like Ted Turner says, buy land. It's the only thing that lasts. It lasts longer than styrofoam. Styrofoam lasts a long time.
I don't know about a McDonald's french fry, but it's close. It's close. Mm. Yeah.
It competes. It competes with a french fry and a Twinkie.
Oh my gosh. Well, Mark, you're awesome. I know you need to run. You've been, and I say that honestly, because I'm not trying to get you off this podcast. You're amazing. This is wonderful. And, but we only had you for a limited time today, but fantastic information. So I'm going to send off for this little investor kit myself. I'm going to make my kids do it. And, TheLandGeek.com. People, get there.
TheLandGeek.com.
I love it. Excellent. Absolutely. Excellent info. Any final takeaways, tips, any just wisdom, you know, about life and world peace or anything you want to share? Just,
you know, it's interesting. I always, when people ask me that, I always say the same thing. I quote Zig Ziglar.
Okay.
And if you'll do for the next 3 to 5 years what other people won't do, you'll be able to do for the rest of your life what other people can't do. So if you literally focus and do the things, these are, I mean, look, it's a simple model, but Mark, this ain't easy, right? There's lots of brick walls along the way and you've got to go through them, and we can be your Sherpa, we can help you get through them. But the pain of any business, like, you know, if it were so easy, everyone would do it. This ain't easy, right? It's simple. So I would say if you'll do for the next 3 to 5 years what other people won't do, you'll be able to do for the rest of your life what other people can't do.
I love it. Mark, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for your wonderful personality and insightful comments and sharing this very well-kept secret. And it's an honor to have you on the show, and we really appreciate it. We wish you the best.
Mark, the honor is all mine, and I hope you will come on my podcast and talk about the exciting world of taxes.
Oh, yeah. It's off the chart, baby. I mean, you thought raw land was where it's at. Nah, it's taxes. Yeah.
No, it really is. You know, if it became like – it was like a choice between going to like a Rolling Stones concert or listening to your podcast, I'd pick your podcast every time.
Dude, you
it's it is adrenaline pumping. And what do you think? But it really is, though, because if I said to you, hey, I can eliminate 30% of your biggest expense in life,
yeah,
that is adrenaline pumping. A lot of people don't realize like that is their biggest expense.
No, it is. And I mean, sorry, little shameless comment of my own here on this is it is amazing. And I'm sure, Mark, you've changed. People call you up and go, you changed my life. You know, people that were that had no retirement. And in that is a huge reward and payoff. And I have it on a regular basis. People that, whether it's in person or over the phone or via an email, I get an email that says, Mark, you literally have changed our financial equation, and to the point where we actually enjoy life and our marriage is saved, our kids are doing, and that type of stuff, you can't put a value on it. And I sound like a cheese ball, but I'm sure you have the same stories.
I know I do. I mean, I'd say to my wife, I can die in peace now. And because it is so gratifying to kind of be that pebble in the pond, and you know, you make that impact, then it ripples out and affects, you know, way more people than you even realize. It really is phenomenal. And you know, it's so often like people ask me, well, you know, can you recommend a good CPA? And I'm like, well, your CPA just does your taxes. You want to find the person that really cares about saving you money. And those are really few and far between, right?
Yeah.
And so what you're doing is a huge, huge service to, you know, to investors and, you know, really anybody that has any financial savviness whatsoever.
Well, I thank you again. And I don't send every podcast of mine to certain family members that I want to have listen to. Not every podcast is a home run, but this is one of them for me. And so I'm going to be sharing this podcast with some close family and friends. So, Mark, thank you again. We wish you the best.
Thanks.
Down in there, sunny Scottsdale, Arizona.
Thanks. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.